Have you ever paused to consider the unseen forces weaving through the grand tapestry of human history? What if some of the most pivotal moments weren't solely about human leaders and nations, but about powerful, intelligent beings working tirelessly, often invisibly, behind the scenes?
It's a truly captivating question, isn't it? We tend to view historical events through a purely human lens, maybe political or economic.
Right.
But the stack of sources we've unearthed today peels back an astonishing layer, revealing a realm of divine intervention that's far more direct and diverse than many might imagine.
You're absolutely right. Today, we're taking a deep dive into an absolutely fascinating and often overlooked aspect of the Old Testament, the surprisingly diverse and direct involvement of angels.
Yeah.
This isn't just about fleeting mentions or, you know, vague spiritual presence.
No, not at all.
Our sources reveal angels acting as active messengers, unwavering protectors, stern enforcers, and even formidable combatants in some of the most iconic and foundational stories of humanity.
And our mission in this deep dive is really to extract those key nuggets of knowledge, those real aha moments that show us exactly how and why angels were not just incidental characters,
right,
but integral to God's profound interactions with humanity in ancient times. We'll unpack the specific instances where these celestial beings stepped into the earthly realm, often with astonishing and frankly sometimes terrifying results.
And crucially, we're not just sifting through biblical verses in isolation. We're drawing from a unique combination: specific Old Testament passages alongside profound interpretive commentaries.
That combination is key.
It is. This powerful duo illuminates the precise roles angels played in these historical accounts, offering a fresh, expanded perspective on events you might think you already know inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pull back the curtain and see what's truly at play. Our journey begins right at the very dawn of recorded human history, with some of the earliest and most poignant interactions detailed in Genesis. And the very first one plunges us into one of humanity's foundational tragedies.
Indeed. Our sources direct us to Genesis 4.6, where it states, "The Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen?" Pretty direct question.
Very direct. But what truly captures one's attention here is the accompanying commentary, which adds a crucial detail often missed.
Yeah, this part's fascinating.
It says, "God condescends to send an angel to Cain to converse with him." An angel to converse.
That word condescends is powerful too. It implies a deliberate stepping down.
This detail is incredibly significant, particularly given how early it appears in the narrative of human interaction with the divine. Here is Cain, consumed by a palpable, corrosive anger and resentment, his countenance fallen, his spirit clearly troubled.
After God accepted Abel's offering, but not his own. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's such a raw, intensely personal and emotionally charged moment. Why would God choose an angel as an intermediary for this direct conversation?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
What does this condescension, as the commentary puts it, reveal about the nature of divine communication and accessibility, especially when humanity is teetering on the edge of transgression?
It reveals something incredibly profound, I think. While God undeniably has the power to speak directly, the choice to send an angel implies a deliberate, tangible manifestation of divine concern.
Tangible, like making the message physical.
Exactly. It brings the message down to a level that Cain could not ignore. An angel's physical presence would lend immense gravity to the moment, almost making God's warning undeniable and immediate.
So it's not just words floating in the air.
Right. It's as if the divine realm itself has leaned in, concerned enough to dispatch an envoy to address this deep-seated anger before it escalates into tragedy. The angel isn't just a messenger. They are embodying the directness and urgency of God's counsel.
So if this is one of the very first recorded interactions of humanity with the divine after the fall, what does this foundational example tell us about the angel's role in human accountability and moral guidance from the absolute dawn of human history? How does it set a precedent for their subsequent multifaceted involvement in human choices?
It establishes angels as active frontline participants in the unfolding drama of human morality right from the outset. Their presence serves as a potent, undeniable reminder of accountability.
A living reminder.
Yeah, They are acting as a direct channel through which God's warnings, his questions, and his guidance are delivered not just as abstract thoughts, but as a tangible presence.
Okay.
It's not merely about delivering a message. It's about making a profound statement about the sheer weight of human decisions and the ever-present divine awareness of our internal struggles and the path they might lead us down.
Mm.
This initial intervention sets a clear precedent for angels to be involved, not just in grand sweeping pronouncements, but in intimate, crucial moments of human moral reckoning and personal crisis.
So right from the beginning, they're deeply involved in the messy parts of human life.
Right.
Moving from the depths of human anger, we now shift to one of the most mysterious and frankly uplifting passages in early Genesis, Enoch's translation.
Ah, Enoch. That was fascinating.
Genesis 5.24 simply states, Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. It's so terse, so brief.
Almost cryptic.
Exactly. But the commentary fills in the astonishing details, adding, God would not permit Enoch to die as other men, but sent his angels to take him to heaven without seeing death.
Wow. Okay, set his angels. That detail is absolutely critical, and it fundamentally shifts our understanding of this enigmatic event.
How so?
It highlights the angels' role not just as messengers or guides, but as agents of divine transport, capable of transcending even the most fundamental natural laws like death.
Agents of transport.
Yeah.
Like a celestial vehicle.
In a way, yes. This isn't just God taking him in some vague sense. It's a profound divine favor, a unique angelic task, demonstrating their power to operate beyond the physical constraints we understand.
Okay.
It wasn't merely a disappearance. It was an active, orchestrated taking by celestial beings, literally lifting Enoch from the earthly realm into the heavenly.
That's a stark, almost unimaginable contrast to the common fate of other men, isn't it?
Right.
Everyone else succumbs to death, a universal certainty.
Right.
Yet Enoch, by divine decree, is granted this extraordinary exception. And it's not just God waving a hand, it's specifically angels being sent, commissioned, to perform this physical, supernatural escort.
It paints a picture of angels as celestial chauffeurs, if you will.
I like that.
Directly bringing the faithful into God's presence, completely bypassing the common human experience of mortality.
That analogy truly captures the essence of it. The phrase, without seeing death, underscores the utterly extraordinary nature of this angelic mission.
It implies that angels possess not only immense power, but also the capacity to intervene in the very fabric of life and death, serving as escorts to the divine presence itself.
So this raises an important question. What does this imply about the angels' power and their involvement in the ultimate destinies of individuals deemed righteous?
Well, it certainly paints a vivid picture of angels acting as divine escorts, not just earthly agents, for those in special favor. It suggests their power operates on a level that fundamentally alters physical reality.
It paints a picture of angels being capable of immense life-altering power, not just to deliver messages or enforce rules, but to literally alter the course of an individual's physical existence.
Right. It's a profound demonstration of their power to escort souls directly into God's presence, highlighting their role in the ultimate transitions of the faithful.
So they are not merely observers of human life and death.
Not at all. They are active, pivotal participants in it, executing divine will in the most miraculous of ways. This shows a deep intimacy and purpose in their interactions with humanity, even beyond the veil of life. Moving from the destiny of an individual to the fate of the entire globe, we arrive at the monumental civilization-altering event of Noah and the flood.
A huge shift in scale.
Definitely. Genesis 6:7-8 mentions God's solemn decision to destroy mankind due to their widespread wickedness, with Noah finding grace. Our commentary adds a crucial, often overlooked detail that he sent his angels to Noah to tell him what his purpose was in regard to the inhabitants of the old world.
So right away, angels are involved in delivering the gravest news imaginable, a prophetic warning of global cataclysmic destruction. That's an incredibly significant and terrifying communication role for them.
Absolutely. But then the sources go even further. After all the animals in Noah's family are safely inside the ark, Genesis 7:16 says, "The Lord shut him in."
A very famous line.
Very. And the commentary clarifies this with an even more specific detail. It was the angel of God closing the door.
Whoa. An angel physically closed the door of the ark.
That's what the commentary suggests. And here we truly witness a dual, absolutely crucial role for angels. First, as purveyors of divine prophecy and dire warning, revealing God's grand destructive purpose for the world.
The messengers of doom, essentially.
In a sense, yes. They are the direct channels for this monumental, epoch-ending communication. Second, and equally dramatic, they act as direct executors of divine will, performing a physical, irreversible act with immense consequences, sealing the Ark.
Sealing the fate of the world outside.
Exactly. This act also serves as a poignant, visible sign of God's power and the certainty of his judgment, which, as our sources note, was openly mocked by those outside.
Imagine the scene for a moment. Noah receiving this terrifying yet vital news from celestial beings. Then, the almost surreal procession of animals, two by two, obediently entering the Ark, a truly solemn scene unfolding before the eyes of a mocking, incredulous world.
The contrast must have been stark.
And finally, that dramatic, irreversible clang of the Ark door closing, with the commentary telling us it was the angel of God closing the door. It's such a powerful image of divine solemnity and finality.
Absolutely.
Starkly contrasting with the sport and revelry of those outside who made a jest of these signal manifestations. The denial must have been profound.
It highlights the chilling human capacity for denial, even in the very face of unmistakable angelic action and impending doom. For those inside, it was a moment of profound security, a sealed haven.
And for those outside,
it was a sealed, irreversible fate. This raises an important question. How do these actions emphasize the angels' roles in both prophetic communication and the ultimate irreversible separation of the righteous from the condemned?
Well, it seems pretty central.
What does it suggest about their integral role in setting the stage for major world-altering epochs in human history?
It reveals angels as fundamental instruments in God's grand narrative for humanity, literally overseeing the end of one era and the beginning of another.
Yeah, they're like transition managers on a cosmic scale.
Exactly. They're not just delivering messages or shutting doors. They are literally facilitating the cataclysmic end of one epoch and the fragile, hopeful beginning of another. They are the tangible, visible to some hand of divine judgment and salvation, drawing a definitive line between two destinies on a global scale. This tells us their involvement isn't just about individual lives, but about shaping the very course of civilization, participating in events that rewrite the world. And speaking of shaping civilization and rewriting the world, our next stop is the infamous Tower of Babel.
Ah, Babel, another foundational story.
Genesis 11:6-7 describes humanity united by a single language, pooling their resources and ambition to build a towering structure, and God saying, "Go to, let us go down." And there confound their language.
The divine us there is interesting in itself.
It is. But the source commentary gives us the absolutely incredible detail that the Lord sent two angels to confound them in their work.
Two angels specifically.
Yes. And get this. As the word was passing from one to another in its descent, the angels confounded their language.
Wow. That's incredibly specific. This is a truly vivid and precise example of angels directly intervening to thwart collective human ambition when it challenges divine prerogative.
It's not just a general confusion descending.
Not at all. The specific detail of two angels is fascinating, and their method disrupting communication as it was passing from one worker to another, mid-sentence, mid-instruction, is incredibly targeted.
Surgical precision.
Absolutely. This wasn't some general curse that fell over the land. It was a surgical, angelic disruption of a vital, moment-by-moment process. It's a remarkable demonstration of precise intellectual warfare, almost.
You can almost picture it, can't you? The tower reaching a lofty height, the air thick with the coordinated sounds of construction, this human chain of command meticulously relaying materials and instructions.
Brick by brick, yeah.
Up and down the rising structure. And then, suddenly, this baffling, confusing breakdown as angels confounded their language mid-transmission.
One moment, clear instruction. The next, gibberish.
Exactly. One moment, they're shouting, "More mortar!" And the next, it's just noise met with bewildered stares. Instant, precise, bewildering chaos that cripples a massive collective effort.
This incident is a powerful statement. What does it signify about the boundaries God sets for human endeavors and the angels' role in maintaining divine order against what was perceived as human overreach and self-aggrandizement?
Well, it seems pretty clear there are limits.
How does it illustrate angels as agents of divine judgment on a societal scale, affecting not just a single city, but the very fabric of global human interaction? This wasn't just about stopping a building. It was about reshaping humanity's future by enforcing division.
It powerfully demonstrates that there are definitive limits to human ambition when it steps outside of or directly challenges divine will.
Yeah.
And the angels are revealed as the active, immediate enforcers of those boundaries.
They're the boundary keepers.
Yes. They are the instruments that prevent human unity, when misdirected, from becoming a tool against God's plan. This isn't merely about preventing a building from being finished. It's about reshaping the very foundations of human society through linguistic division,
yeah,
thereby scattering people across the earth.
So in a strange way,
angels are, in essence, the uncredited architects of our linguistic diversity, and by extension, our dispersed global populations.
That's a fascinating perspective. Architects of division, but for a divine purpose. From sweeping societal judgment, we now turn to a deeply personal, intimate crisis. Genesis 16:5-16 details Hagar's flight from Sarai's harsh treatment, fleeing into the desolate wilderness.
A really difficult situation for her.
Absolutely. The Bible explicitly states, "The angel of the Lord found her." What's fascinating is how the commentary broadens the scope of this interaction.
Also,
it states, "The Lord, through a holy angel, directed him, Abraham, to grant Sarah's desire." So it connects the angel's action back to Abraham's decision.
Ah, I see. So it wasn't just about Hagar in that moment.
Exactly. And it continues. And the angel gave him, Abraham, through Hagar, the consoling promise. Ishmael should not be forsaken by God. His life should be preserved, and he should become the father of a great nation.
This highlights a crucial nuance, doesn't it? The biblical text itself shows the angel speaking directly to Hagar, offering comfort and immediate direction in her distress.
Right, finding her by the spring.
But the commentary expands this, framing the angelic interaction as also serving a broader divine plan, subtly influencing Abraham's difficult decision-making regarding Hagar and Ishmael, even though it brought him keen suffering.
So it shows angels as instruments of both profound personal comfort and a larger, often painful, divine directive that ties into a bigger narrative. They're operating on multiple levels.
Precisely. This interaction showcases angels in a deeply personal and compassionate role towards a distressed individual like Hagar, who is vulnerable and outcast.
Yet simultaneously, they deliver a significant prophecy about the future of her son, Ishmael, even detailing his character that he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man.
It's a mixed prophecy, really. Not all good news.
No, it's very realistic about the future conflict. The angel doesn't just tell her to go back. They give her a future, a lineage, and a profound promise.
And the fact that Abraham himself obeyed the angel's word, conveyed through Hagar, despite his own personal pain.
It truly underscores the profound authority and weight of these angelic messages. It's a testament to their communicative power.
Let's vividly set the scene for our listeners. Hagar, isolated, vulnerable, fleeing into the unforgiving wilderness, perhaps feeling utterly alone and without hope.
Desperate.
Suddenly, an angel finds her by a fountain of water, a literal oasis of divine intervention. The angel's specific instructions, "Return to thy mistress," might seem harsh on the surface, a callback to a difficult situation.
Yeah, go back to the source of the trouble.
But then comes the rich, comforting prophecy concerning Ishmael, including the profound meaning of his name, "God hath heard thy affliction." It's a truly intricate blend of divine justice, immediate direction, and deep empathy, all delivered by a celestial being.
This complex interaction prompts a significant reflection. How do angels here embody both divine justice in directing Hagar's return to what was part of the established, albeit difficult, order?
Right, upholding the structure.
And profound divine mercy in the promise of Ishmael's significant future. What does this tell us about their nuanced role in guiding individuals through deeply personal crises and shaping not just individual lives, but entire family lineages that would impact history for millennia?
It tells us that angels are not just rigid, unfeeling enforcers, but also compassionate, discerning guides who see beyond immediate suffering to a larger providential plan.
They navigate the complexities.
They do. They navigate the intricate complexities of human relationships and divine decrees with a precision that's truly remarkable. They offer both what might seem like tough love and profound hope. Mm. Their involvement here is about bringing comfort to the desolate, providing clear direction in confusion, and even shaping the destiny of entire branches of humanity, ensuring that even those who feel cast aside or marginalized are still firmly within the purview of God's overarching care and plan. It's a powerful reminder of how intimately they minister. As we transition from the foundational narratives of Genesis into the epic, nation-shaping events of Exodus and Joshua, we see the scale of angelic involvement shift dramatically.
Yeah, things definitely escalate.
Often moving from personal encounters to monumental interventions that redefine the course of history for an entire people.
Our first stop in Exodus is a dramatic, almost startling, and certainly stern intervention directly involving Moses himself.
Right before the big mission, too.
Exactly. Exodus 4.24.26 describes God meeting Moses, by the way, in the inn and seeking to kill him. Our commentary explains the shocking reason. An angel appeared to him in a threatening manner, as if he would immediately destroy him.
Threatening Moses, the chosen deliverer.
Yes, and the reason. He had neglected to perform the rite of circumcision upon their youngest son.
Wow. This is such a stark, almost brutal moment, isn't it? Moses, the chosen leader, on his way to deliver an entire nation, suddenly facing immediate existential peril.
It truly highlights angels as direct, uncompromising enforcers of divine law and covenant obligations, even for someone as pivotal and divinely appointed as Moses.
That threatening manner and the explicit intent to destroy him, it truly underscores the absolute gravity of Moses' omission.
Absolutely. It also showcases the crucial quick thinking of Zipporah to act decisively on his behalf, preventing a catastrophe. She performs the right then and there.
Indeed. It's described as a startling and terrible warning. Try to visualize it. Moses, perhaps resting for the night, suddenly confronted by an angelic presence in a menacing posture, wielding an undeniable threat.
Terrifying.
Then the almost instantaneous cessation of that threat. Once Zipporah, in a moment of sheer courage and quick discernment, fearing for her husband's life, performed the necessary rite with a sharp stone.
She saved him.
This incident isn't just a minor biblical detail. It's a critical moment of profound accountability, demonstrating that even those closest to God's mission are not exempt from his commands.
It's a powerful and, frankly, uncomfortable scene, but it serves a vital purpose. What does this critical moment tell us about the angel's uncompromising role in upholding the sanctity of the covenant?
And ensuring that God's chosen leaders are fully aligned with his requirements before undertaking such monumental tasks. This isn't just about personal piety. It's about the integrity of the mission itself.
It communicates an uncompromising message. No one, absolutely no one, not even a divinely appointed pivotal leader like Moses, is exempt from God's sacred requirements. Angels here act as uncompromising guardians of the covenant.
Guardians, yeah.
Ensuring purity and absolute obedience at the highest levels of leadership. Their fundamental role is to ensure that those who are meant to represent God and lead his people are fully compliant with his commands.
Sets a standard.
A very clear, very serious precedent for the entire nation they are meant to lead. It emphasizes the absolute seriousness with which God views the terms of his covenant and the angel's direct, immediate, and sometimes terrifying role in enforcing it without hesitation.
From individual enforcement, we now move to perhaps the most famous and certainly the most devastating angelic intervention in all of history. The Passover.
Yeah, this is a big one. Foundational.
Exodus 12.22.29 details the specific, chilling Passover instructions, and the commentary directly attributes the climactic action to an angel, stating, "When the angel came on his mission of death, he might pass over the homes of the Israelites."
The destroying angel, or angel of death, this is a truly powerful and awe-inspiring demonstration of angels acting as executors of large-scale divine judgment and salvation simultaneously.
Simultaneously, that's key.
Yes. The angel acts as the direct, unseen agent of God's ultimate plague, distinguishing with terrifying precision between those marked by obedience, the blood on the doorposts, and those who are not.
Based entirely on that visible sign.
Exactly. It's an undeniable, chilling manifestation of divine power, working through a celestial agent with a mandate of life and death. The sheer scale of it is staggering.
Let's truly set the scene for our listeners. Imagine the specific, urgent instruction for the Israelite families to place the lamb's blood on their doorposts, a seemingly simple act, yet fraught with immense significance.
Life or death significance.
Then emphasize the angel's mission of death, descending upon the land of Egypt at the stroke of midnight, a silent, pervasive force striking all the firstborn, from the palace of Pharaoh to the humblest household.
Across the entire land.
Now, powerfully contrast this devastating visitation with the explicit, miraculous sparing of the Israelite homes, marked by the angel passing over each one, a clear line drawn by divine decree. The sheer magnitude and precise targeting of that night's events are mind-boggling.
And the angel's mission was not indiscriminate chaos. It was precise, targeted, and delivered with surgical accuracy, based entirely on that specific, visible sign of the blood. This event marks a fundamental turning point in the history of Israel, truly the very birth of a nation, forged in the crucible of divine judgment and miraculous deliverance.
It absolutely does.
This raises a compelling question. How does this event portray angels not just in individual isolated encounters, but as active, essential participants in monumental historical events that fundamentally shape the destiny of entire nations, shifting the course of human civilization?
It portrays them as the direct, tangible hand of God in shaping national destinies, executing large-scale divine policy. This wasn't a natural disaster or a chaotic act of vengeance.
Yeah, it was specific.
It was a specific, deliberate act of judgment and deliverance executed by an intelligent, discerning agent. The Passover angel shows us that angels are key, pivotal players in historical turning points, capable of affecting entire populations in one swift, terrifying night and initiating completely new eras for God's chosen people.
They are essential to the very foundation and liberation of Israel as a nation.
And as Israel makes their miraculous escape from Egypt, we come to another iconic, awe-inspiring moment, the parting of the Red Sea.
Another seemingly impossible situation.
Exodus 14.2425 mentions the Lord troubling the host of the Egyptians, causing chaos and confusion. But our commentary provides a specific, astonishing detail about the angelic action that truly illuminates how this troubling occurred.
Oh, this is good.
It says, angels of God went through their host and removed their chariot wheels.
Removed the chariot wheels. Wow. Here, angels are directly intervening in a desperate, seemingly insurmountable military situation.
Not just protecting, but actively sabotaging.
Exactly. They are not merely providing a protective shield for God's people, but actively hindering and systematically dismantling the enemy's forces through a physical, mechanical interference.
That's incredible.
This specific targeted sabotage turned the tide of the pursuit instantly, rendering the most advanced military technology of the day, Pharaoh's chariots, utterly useless in a watery death trap. It's an incredible display of strategic celestial engineering.
Visualize this dramatic, terrifying scene for a moment. The Egyptians, relentless in their pursuit, dared to venture in the path God had prepared for his people, thundering into the parted sea, thinking victory was theirs.
Arrogance and desperation combined.
The pillar of fire and of the cloud overseeing the scene, a watchful divine presence. Then, the almost surreal, utterly unexpected image of angels moving through the enemy ranks, unseen but undeniably present, physically removing chariot wheels.
Can you imagine the chaos?
Hear the grinding of metal, the sudden lurching, the cries of panic as their chariots drave them heavily into the muddy seabed, becoming bogged down, unmaneuverable. It's a complete mechanical breakdown on a massive scale, divinely orchestrated with terrifying efficiency.
This wasn't a vague troubling. It was a very precise, tangible act of sabotage that crippled the elite fighting force of the ancient world.
No question.
This raises a crucial question. How does this specific physical intervention in a battle demonstrate angels as strategic, indispensable elements in divine military campaigns, capable of turning the tide of war through direct, tangible, even mechanical action?
Well, it changes how you view divine intervention.
This is warfare on a cosmic scale, with angels acting as frontline operatives, engaging directly with the enemy's equipment.
This shows angels as not just observers of battles, but as active, hands-on combat engineers, capable of physically disabling an enemy's most crucial assets with pinpoint accuracy.
Combat engineers, I like that.
They are strategic assets in God's arsenal, proving that divine intervention can be incredibly practical and devastatingly effective on the battlefield. It tells us that when God's people are cornered and facing insurmountable odds, angels are ready to get their hands, or rather their spiritual powerful hands, dirty to ensure victory. They are the ultimate force multipliers, proving that divine power isn't just miraculous, it's also incredibly pragmatic and efficient in achieving its aims.
Continuing on the theme of overwhelming military intervention, we arrive at the spectacular and truly unique fall of Jericho.
The walls came tumbling down.
Exactly. Joshua 6.20.21 describes the city walls simply falling after the trumpets sounded and the people shouted, but the commentary powerfully elaborates, revealing the unseen power. The captain of the Lord's host came himself from heaven to lead the armies of heaven in the attack upon the city.
Okay, so a high-ranking commander is present.
Yes, and then this. Angels of God laid hold of the massive walls and brought them to the ground.
Laid hold of the walls. Physically.
Oh, that's the claim. This is an unparalleled example of direct, overwhelming angelic military involvement in human conquest. Not only is a high-ranking angelic figure, the captain of the Lord's host, explicitly leading the charge, but angels are described as physically demolishing these massive walls with their own strength. This elevates the event from a mere human military feat, no matter how miraculous, to a direct, visible demonstration of divine power manifested through angelic agents. It wasn't just a vibration or a structural flaw, it was angels literally tearing them down.
Absolutely. Let's recount the familiar story of the trumpet sounding and the shouts rising from the Israelite camp. Now, layer on that astonishing revelatory detail. It was angels of God who physically laid hold of the massive walls and brought them to the ground.
Imagine the sound of that.
Imagine the thunderous roar as those enormous stones groaned and split, not from an earthquake, but from an unseen, concentrated celestial force. You can almost hear the triumphant shouts of Israel mixing with the panicked cries from within Jericho's walls as the very fabric of their defenses was torn apart by these celestial engineers.
A supernatural wrecking crew.
Exactly. It was an instant, overwhelming demolition.
This unprecedented scale of physical destruction by angels really makes you pause. What does this imply about their sheer power and their integral role in establishing God's kingdom on earth, even through seemingly impossible military victories that defy all natural laws?
It implies power on a scale we can barely comprehend.
It implies an immense, almost unimaginable physical power available to these beings, power that can literally reshape topography and dismantle the strongest human fortifications. They are not just invisible influences or messengers, they are tangible, destructive forces capable of annihilating obstacles. Their role here is fundamental to God's plan for Israel's settlement in the Promised Land. It highlights angels as essential enablers of God's territorial claims, demonstrating that no human fortification, no matter how impregnable, how thick, or how tall, can possibly stand against the mobilized armies of heaven.
It's a resounding declaration of divine sovereignty over earthly strongholds, executed by his celestial forces. Moving beyond the grand nation-defining events, our deep dive reveals that angels also play incredibly diverse, often intimate, and sometimes surprising roles in the lives of individuals and the daily operations and spiritual integrity of God's people.
Yeah, the scope really broadens here. It's not all battles and judgment. After leading his people to the very edge of the Promised Land, Deuteronomy 34:5-6 states with profound brevity that Moses died according to the word of the Lord, and crucially, no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day.
A complete mystery surrounding his final resting place.
A complete mystery. But our commentary adds this exceptionally tender, often overlooked detail. But angels of God buried the body of his faithful servant and watched over the lonely grave.
Angels buried Moses and watched over his grave.
That's what the commentary suggests. This truly reveals a tender, almost private, and deeply reverent role for angels. They are depicted not just in grand public acts of judgment or deliverance, but in a solemn, intimately personal act of care for a departed servant of God.
That's quite moving, actually.
It is. The secrecy of the burial, combined with the ongoing angelic oversight, speaks volumes about divine reverence and protection that extends even into death. It's not just God taking Moses' spirit, it's angels specifically performing the physical act of burial.
And then staying.
And then, remarkably, continuing to watch over the lonely grave. What an image.
It truly is. Emphasize that enduring mystery that no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. It was angels of God who carried out this incredibly sensitive and personal duty, a testament to their unwavering loyalty and care.
This prompts us to consider, what does this intimate act imply about the angels' reverence, their profound care, and their ongoing responsibility for God's faithful, even after their earthly lives conclude?
It hints at a service that doesn't end at death.
It implies a profound, enduring care that quite literally transcends the boundary of life and death. Angels are not just active during a person's life, they maintain a sacred trust and responsibility even for the deceased, especially for those who have served God faithfully.
So they're like faithful custodians.
Exactly. Reverently attending to the final rest of those who served God, highlighting their deep respect and unwavering commitment to divine purposes, even in the quietest, most solemn, and hidden moments. It's a remarkable insight into the depth of their character and their multifaceted service.
From the solemnity of death, let's now pivot to the miraculous realities of daily life and sustenance.
From burial to breakfast, you might say.
Oh, precisely. Psalm 78:24-25, in describing God's provision in the wilderness, refers to him raining down corn of heaven and states that man did eat angels' food.
Angel's food, a very evocative phrase.
It is. Our commentary explicitly clarifies this poetic phrase, stating it means food provided for them by the angels.
Okay, so not just heavenly food in a general sense, but specifically provided by angels.
That's the interpretation. This detail dramatically shifts our perspective on the manna, doesn't it? It places angels as direct, daily providers of physical nourishment for an entire nation over a prolonged, arduous period of 40 years in the wilderness.
40 years of angelic catering service.
Basically, it clarifies that the miraculous manna was not just abstractly from heaven generally, but specifically, tangibly, provided for them by the angels, underscoring their active, hands-on role in sustaining life for millions day after day. It makes the miracle even more personal.
Indeed. We can truly detail the daily provision of the corn of heaven, emphasizing that through this ongoing miracle, the Israelites were daily taught that, having God's promise, they were as secure from want as if surrounded by fields of waving grain on the fertile plains of Canaan.
A daily lesson in dependence and provision.
And this direct, continuous link to angels as the explicit providers adds another profound layer of divine care, almost a personal, intimate touch to the daily miraculous. It's not just a cosmic vending machine, it's a dedicated service.
This highlights a foundational daily support role for angels, a stark contrast with their more dramatic, singular interventions like parting the sea or demolishing walls.
Right, it's the mundane miracle.
What does this pervasive and constant nature of angelic ministration in daily life suggest about their role in divine providence? It implies a much deeper, more embedded involvement than we typically consider.
It suggests that angelic involvement isn't limited to crises, grand pronouncements, or epic-ending judgments. It's a pervasive, constant, and intricate part of divine providence, ensuring the very survival and well-being of God's people on a day-to-day, moment-by-moment basis.
They're woven into the fabric of daily life.
They are the unseen, tireless hands behind the daily miracles, making the impossible a routine reality. It shows a continuous, intimate level of support and care that goes far beyond what we typically imagine, revealing angels as integral to the very fabric of sustaining life and fulfilling God's covenant promises.
Now let's turn to another military intervention, but one on a completely different scale from the grand nation-level conflicts we just explored.
More of a special ops mission, perhaps?
Maybe. In 1 Samuel 14.19-23, we see a dramatic scene where confusion breaks out among the Philistines during Jonathan's seemingly impossible attack. The commentary explains the unseen forces at play.
Ah, yes, Jonathan and his armor-bearer against the garrison.
Exactly. The commentary says, "Angels of heaven shielded Jonathan and his attendant. Angels fought by their side, and the Philistines fell before them."
Okay, so direct protection and combat assistance.
But also this.
Yeah.
In the confusion, mistaking their own soldiers for enemies, the Philistines began to slay one another. Friendly fire induced by angels.
Induced confusion. This account reveals angels involved in a specific, smaller scale, yet strategically critical military engagement. They are providing both direct physical protection for key individuals, Jonathan and his attendant, and causing profound strategic chaos and psychological disarray among the enemy.
And it wasn't subtle either.
No. The detail that even the Philistines know that God was working for the deliverance of Israel through these unmistakable tokens of divine aid highlights the tangible, undeniable effect of this angelic presence, even if unseen to most.
Let's vividly describe the scene. Jonathan's incredibly small, almost laughably insignificant force, just Jonathan and his armor-bearer against a numerically superior, intimidating Philistine host.
The odds were impossible.
Then the bizarre, almost supernatural elements began to manifest. The earth trembled as though a great multitude with horsemen and chariots were approaching. The commentary suggests this was angelic activity causing the sound and tremor.
Psychological warfare.
Absolutely. A great fear seizing the Philistines, and the critical, almost ironic detail of them mistaking their own soldiers for enemies and starting to slay one another. It's not just a battle. It's divine psychological warfare executed with chilling precision.
This localized angelic intervention offers fascinating insights into their versatility in military support. It demonstrates that they can influence the psychology and actions of combatants as much as they can affect physical outcomes or directly intervene in the environment.
So it's not just brute force.
No, this is a sophisticated level of intervention, far beyond simply fighting or blocking. How does this kind of strategic, disruptive, angelic activity affect our understanding of spiritual warfare and divine assistance in conflict?
It powerfully demonstrates that angels are not just physically powerful beings, but also masters of tactical disruption and psychological manipulation. They can create a literal fog of war, induce widespread panic, and turn an enemy's strength and numbers against itself.
Using the enemy's own force against them.
Exactly. Their involvement here isn't about brute force, but about strategic brilliance, showing that heavenly courses can win battles not just by destroying, but by confusing, disorienting, and ultimately dismantling from within. It's a subtle but devastating form of divine intervention, showcasing their tactical prowess beyond mere strength.
Our next example takes us into a realm often seen as highly human and technical, sacred architecture.
From the battlefield to the drawing board.
Precisely. 1 Chronicles 28.19 states that David received the intricate pattern for the temple by his hand upon me, a divine impartation. Our commentary specifies, with remarkable detail, that the Lord, through his angel, instructed David and gave him a pattern of the house.
Okay, an angel delivered the instructions.
But wait, there's more. An angel was commissioned to stand by David while he was writing out, for the benefit of Solomon, the important directions.
Stand by him while he wrote, like dictating or overseeing.
It sounds like overseeing, ensuring accuracy. This truly reveals angels in an incredibly specialized, highly detailed, and perhaps unexpectedly meticulous role, conveying precise architectural and organizational blueprints for a sacred structure of immense importance. But even more astonishing, they were commissioned to stand by David while he was writing out the plans. This isn't just a vague inspiration or a general idea. It underscores the immense importance of the temple's design and the meticulousness of divine communication for such a holy purpose. This was essentially a divine dictation, ensuring absolute accuracy.
Let's delve into David's closing years, marked by faithful devotion and his earnest, heartfelt desire to provide for the temple's construction. Emphasize the angel's role in instructing David on the pattern of the house, guiding him through every intricate detail.
Layout, materials, vessels, services, everything.
Right. And then the truly remarkable detail of an angel being commissioned to stand by David while he was writing out these important directions for Solomon. This ensures absolute accuracy and divine approval down to the smallest detail, preventing any human error or misinterpretation in the transmission of such vital plans.
What does this specific, highly detailed assistance imply about the angel's involvement in transmitting and ensuring the accuracy and integrity of divine plans for religious structures, sacred rituals, and indeed, the very future of God's people and their worship?
It elevates their role far beyond simple messengers, doesn't it?
It implies an extraordinary level of involvement and precision, revealing angels as more than just general conveyors of messages. They are meticulous scribes, celestial architects, and divine project managers.
Divine project managers, that's great.
Ensuring that every detail of a sacred blueprint is accurately transmitted and recorded without deviation. This highlights their crucial role in preserving divine purity and ensuring that God's instructions for worship and service are followed to the letter, safeguarding the integrity of sacred acts and the purity of worship for generations to come. It's a testament to their dedication to divine order and meticulous execution.
From meticulous architectural design, we now pivot to a stark, even terrifying reminder of divine holiness and the consequences of violating it.
Yeah, this one is jarring.
1 Samuel 6:6-9 describes the immediate death of Uzzah after he touched the Ark of the Covenant. Our commentary clarifies this swift judgment, stating chillingly, angels who attended the ark struck down Uzzah for presuming impatiently to put his hand upon the ark of God.
Struck down by the attending angels. This is a stark, almost brutal example of angels acting as immediate, uncompromising enforcers of divine holiness and sacred boundaries.
Even though his intention might have seemed good, he was trying to steady it, right?
Exactly. The consequence for Uzzah, despite his apparent good intention to steady the ark and prevent it from falling, highlights the absolute non-negotiable sanctity of divine commands and the unwavering, unyielding role of angels in upholding them.
It wasn't about intention, but action.
It seems so. It was a swift, severe judgment, not by some abstract force or divine lightning bolt, but explicitly by the very angels accompanying the ark, demonstrating their protective and punitive roles simultaneously.
Let's recount the scene at Nashon's threshing floor, a moment of celebration turning to horror. The oxen drawing the cart shook the ark, and Uzzah, out of perhaps what he thought was good intention, put forth his hand to the ark of God to prevent it from falling to the ground.
A seemingly reflexive action.
Emphasized that it was angels who attended the ark that struck down Uzzah in that instant, leading to his immediate shocking death and causing David's profound fear and displeasure. He was afraid to bring the ark any further at first.
Understandably so. The seemingly innocent act had lethal consequences, not because God was capricious, but because of the absolute sacred nature of the Ark and the angel's unwavering role as its vigilant, uncompromising guardians.
This incident powerfully illustrates the angel's role in maintaining sacred order and the dire immediate consequences of presuming upon divine holiness or violating specific commands.
This raises a crucial question. What does this event tell us about the seriousness with which divine commands are upheld by these celestial guardians, especially concerning matters of direct interaction with God's holy presence? It's a powerful lesson in reverence.
It tells us that angels are uncompromising guardians of divine protocol and holiness. Their role is to ensure that the sacred is treated with the utmost reverence and that boundaries set by God are not crossed, ever.
Not even accidentally, it seems.
Even with what might seem like logical, well-intentioned human intervention, this demonstrates their absolute commitment to God's standards, reminding us that there's a profound difference between earthly logic and divine holiness, and angels are the active, unwavering enforcers of that critical distinction.
It underscores that holiness is not something to be taken lightly, and angels play a direct role in maintaining that awe-inspiring separation.
Finally, we turn our attention to how angels manifest themselves in grand visions and deliver prophetic messages, often in dramatic public displays of God's power and impending judgment, revealing deeper truths about their nature and purpose.
Moving into the prophetic literature now, yes. Our first example here is truly awe-inspiring, a direct glimpse into the very throne room of heaven itself. Isaiah 6.1-6 describes Isaiah's profound vision of the Lord, attended by powerful, high-ranking, angelic beings known as seraphim.
Seraphim, the burning ones.
That's the traditional understanding, yes. Our commentary elaborates on the seraphim's majestic characteristics, and crucially, one bringing a live coal in his hand to cleanse Isaiah's lips.
This is a direct, awe-inspiring, almost overwhelming vision of incredibly powerful, high-ranking angelic beings, the seraphim, in a worshipful context directly around God's throne.
The imagery is incredible.
Their unique appearance with six wings, two covering their face in profound humility, two covering their feet in reverence, and two used for swift flight and service, and their resonant, continuous cry of holy, holy, holy underscore their unparalleled reverence and unique status within the divine hierarchy.
It's a glimpse into the very heart of heaven, with these angels as the closest, most devoted attendants to the divine presence.
Furthermore, this vision reveals one particular seraphim acting as an agent of direct physical purification. He explicitly brings a live coal in his hand, taken from off the altar, a sacred source of purification, to physically touch Isaiah's unclean lips.
That's intense. A burning coal to the lips.
It is. This isn't merely symbolic. It's a tangible, physical act performed by a celestial being, directly preparing a human for sacred service and divine communication. It makes Isaiah fit to deliver God's word, demonstrating the angel's role in sanctification.
Immerse yourself, our listener, in the sheer majesty of Isaiah's vision. I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Picture the seraphim's glorious appearance, their majestic wings, and their never-ending chorus of holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory.
The whole place shaking.
Then focus on that specific, powerful moment when one seraphim flies to Isaiah, holding that live, burning coal to touch his unclean lips, ensuring he is made fit and pure to speak for God. It's a moment of both terror and profound grace.
This profound vision conveys so much about the very nature of these high-ranking angels, their intimate proximity to the divine presence, and their active role in facilitating human interaction with the holy.
What does it tell us about their function beyond just messengers, but as agents of purity and connection to the divine throne itself?
It conveys their ultimate reverence, their inherent holiness, and their absolutely integral role in the divine court. These seraphims are not just decorative attendants, they are active, indispensable participants in upholding God's holiness and facilitating communication between the perfectly holy and the imperfect human.
They bridge the gap.
Exactly. Their actions show they are agents of both worship and sanctification, quite literally making it possible for mortal beings like Isaiah to stand, endure, and receive God's message in the presence of overwhelming holiness. They are the essential bridge between perfect holiness and human imperfection, purifying the conduits of divine truth. Finally, let's turn to one of the most dramatic and undeniably public angelic manifestations in all of Scripture, Belshazzar's decadent feast, described in the book of Daniel.
The writing on the wall, literally.
Literally. Daniel 5.5 states, In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand, and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. The commentary leaves no room for doubt, clearly identifying these as mystic characters traced by the hand of an angel of God.
The hand of an angel. This is a direct, public, and absolutely terrifying angelic manifestation, deliberately delivering a cryptic message of impending judgment to a king who had brazenly defied God.
Using the temple vessels for a drunken party.
Precisely. The visible, disembodied hand appearing out of nowhere and creating mystic characters on the palace wall made the divine message undeniably real and immediate. No one present could claim it was a dream, a hallucination, or a trick of the light. It was a physical, tangible inscription.
And nobody could read it, except Daniel.
Right. The inability of the king's wise men and astrologers to interpret it further emphasizes the desperate need for divine aid specifically, through Daniel, to understand such profound angelic revelation.
Set the scene of Belshazzar's extravagant, blasphemous feast. A moment of profound irreverence, where sacred vessels plundered from God's temple were profaned by unholy use. The sound of revelry, laughter, and sacrilege filling the air.
A real low point.
Then the sudden, shocking, terrifying appearance of fingers of a man's hand emerging from the air, writing on the wall, visible to all present. Highlight that these mystic characters were explicitly traced by the hand of an angel of God, and the profound terror they immediately instilled in the king and his entire court, turning their revelry into trembling fear.
The party stopped dead.
Instantly. It's a powerful parallel to Nebuchadnezzar's earlier dreams, where the king's own wise men were powerless, showing a pattern of divine communication that only true prophets, aided by God, could unlock.
This truly demonstrates how angels act as agents of prophetic revelation and impending judgment. They make divine messages undeniably visible and demand an immediate, undeniable response, even from the most powerful and arrogant earthly rulers.
So what does this dramatic public display tell us about the angel's role in forcing humanity, particularly those in power, to confront divine reality and accountability?
They act as direct, unmistakable conduits of divine judgment, bypassing all conventional human channels and making God's pronouncements physically undeniable. This manifestation wasn't just a message, it was a performance.
A divine performance piece.
Yes. A shattering display designed to shock the king out of his complacency and publicly announce the irreversible end of his reign. It proves that angels can directly intervene to force even the most arrogant and oblivious rulers to confront divine reality, making God's will manifest in a way that is both terrifyingly clear and utterly unforgettable.
It's divine intervention that cannot be rationalized away. #tag tag tag outro. Wow, what an incredible, expansive journey through the Old Testament. We've peeled back the layers of familiar stories and discovered angels in an astonishing array of roles far beyond simple celestial beings.
It's been quite a ride, hasn't it?
We saw them as direct communicators and empathetic guides to individuals like Cain and Hagar, powerful escorts for Enoch, precise celestial engineers literally confounding language at Babel, and even physical gatekeepers shutting the ark door on an unrepentant world.
And their profound involvement didn't stop there. We explored their roles as uncompromising enforcers of covenant law with Moses, agents of both widespread death and miraculous deliverance during the Passover.
Chariot wheel removers.
Huh. Yes. Strategic combatants, disabling chariots at the Red Sea, and physically bringing down the massive walls of Jericho.
Beyond the grand sweeping acts, we also glimpsed their tender, intimate care in burying Moses, their continuous daily provision of angels' food to a nation in the wilderness.
The catering service, right.
Their brilliant tactical support in smaller battles like Jonathan's, their incredibly detailed assistance to David in preparing the precise blueprints for the temple, and their swift, unwavering enforcement of holiness and divine boundaries with Uzzah.
And finally, we witnessed their majestic, awe-inspiring presence in Isaiah's profound vision of the seraphim, acting as agents of cleansing and worship, and their direct, unmistakable hand in delivering prophetic judgment at Belshazzar's feast, quite literally writing the future on the wall for all to see.
What truly stands out, what truly creates those aha moments from this deep dive, is that angels are far from passive or merely symbolic figures in the ancient narratives.
Not at all. They are active, intelligent, incredibly diverse, and immensely powerful agents, consistently bridging the divine and human realms.
They are truly vital instruments of divine communication, unwavering protection, swift judgment, daily sustenance, and profound revelation, always serving God's purposes in the most practical, precise, and often unexpected ways.
They are fundamental to understanding how God intricately interacted with humanity in ancient times. It adds a whole dimension to these stories.
Understanding these detailed, specific roles of angels profoundly enriches your appreciation for divine providence and reveals the vibrant, often unseen world that constantly intersects with our own. It's a powerful reminder of how intricately connected heaven and earth truly are. Far beyond what we often imagine in our daily lives.
Indeed. And considering how consistently, specifically, and tangibly angels were involved in these foundational moments of history, guiding, intervening, and shaping events for individuals and nations.
Yeah.
What might this imply about their ongoing, unseen involvement in the world today?
That's the provocative thought, isn't it? Are we ever truly alone in the unfolding of events, big or small, personal or global?
Or is there always a layer of unseen, dedicated activity with celestial beings supporting, guiding, and intervening, perhaps in ways we can only begin to fathom?
It's a thought worth pondering, long after our deep dive concludes.
If you enjoyed this study and would like to learn more, please go to revelationwithdaniel.com and search for Angels Studies. You will find a growing list of this type of podcasts.